So the reading is from Luke 7, 1 to 17. When Jesus had finished saying all this to the people who were listening, he entered Capernaum. There, a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was sick and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him. This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue. So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes, and that one, come, and he comes. I say to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him, and turning to the crowd following him, he said, I tell you, I have not found such great faith even in Israel. Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Soon afterward, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and a large crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, don't cry. Then he went up and touched the bier they were carrying him on, and the bearers stood still. He said, young man, I say to you, get up. The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. They were all filled with awe and praised God. A great prophet has appeared among us, they said. God has come to help his people. This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country.
Thanks, Dave. Well, John, now's your time. It's great to have John sharing with us this morning. We always appreciate you, John, and what you have to bring us. So thank you for your commitment to us as a church and for sharing with us this morning. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Simon, and good morning, everybody. It's lovely to be with you all. What I really enjoyed about our journey through Luke's Gospel has just been the sheer variety of the topics that we've covered in the past few weeks, and I'm looking forward to hearing more in the weeks ahead. Now, Luke's Gospel was quite unique in that it was written to an individual, and if you look back into chapter 1 right at the beginning there, we can see how Luke explains how he carefully investigated and had written this orderly account of Jesus' life, and he addressed it to the most excellent Theophilus. And he said he did this so that he may know the certainty of what he had been taught. A bit later on, Luke also wrote the book of Acts to the same person, Theophilus, and we think he was probably a high-ranking Roman official. And Luke himself was an educated man, a doctor. He was a contemporary of the Apostle Paul, and sometimes he betrays his medical experience when he just describes the or highlights the condition of the sick people that came to Jesus for healing. And here we have it, two miracles that Dave read to us there, pieced together in Luke's account. The first involved a man of standing. He was a centurion in the Roman army. He was an officer with authority, and he sought Jesus out to heal his sick servant. We read that this soldier had also helped the Jews build the synagogue, and he was well respected by them. And Jesus commended the man for his faith, and he healed his servant without even the need to see him. And this powerful miracle, it just demonstrated the power of faith. And it was also significant that the man was a Gentile. Jesus even said he hadn't seen such faith as this within Israel. He's possibly doing this just to show Theophilus, his friend, who could well have been a Gentile, more than likely was, just the power of miracles. But this morning, we're going to focus on the second miracle, which was even more dramatic and involved Jesus raising the widow's son from the dead. Now, belief in miracles, I don't know how you find, but they can be a major stumbling block to people who are exploring the faith. People are bound to ask, and they will, where is the evidence? You know, what is the science behind them? That's why I felt it was lovely last week just to hear Jane speak about her own experience of a miraculous healing earlier in her life. And I guess as we're listening this morning, we too may have stories of interventions in our own lives and our own journey, which we have only concluded could be miraculous. The book of Hebrews speaks about this faith of being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. Now, I watched a TV documentary about 18 months ago on Channel 4, I don't know whether you saw it, and it was called For Sama, and it was filmed by a 26-year-old woman in Aleppo, Syria. And it started with the protests against the government regime, which over the years developed into the full-blown civil war. And the filmmaker's fiance, he was a doctor at an Aleppo hospital. And throughout the filming of the series, innocent casualties of the war were brought in, sometimes with awful injuries. It was quite harrowing, and many people, including children, died. Actually, the title of the film, For Sama, was intended as a kind of love letter to the filmmaker's own daughter, who was actually born during filming a bit later on. But in one scene, there was a funeral procession, and it was quite typical of those in the Middle East, where grieving crowds joined in the mourning through the streets. The coffin was being carried through the streets. There was quite a bit of noise and bustling. And I thought this would have been a very similar scene to the funeral today we read about in the town of Nain. But unlike the centurion in the first miracle, the widow in our story in the second miracle, she would have had little power in the patriarchal society of the day. She was a widow, so she'd already experienced the loss of her husband. And now she was faced with the unbearable grief of losing her only son. I mean, incidentally, he would also have been probably her means of financial support later in life. So this woman's life had literally fallen apart, and she would also be destitute. And we read in verse 12 there, don't we, how Jesus and his followers approached the town of Nain. This was about 15 to 20 miles south of Capernaum, where he'd actually healed the centurion's son the day before. So we're only one day after when Jesus and his followers approached Nain, and they were pumped up and raving for more. Then we read, don't we, that there was a kind of an awkward standoff at the town gate when Jesus and his followers met the large crowds carrying the coffin out of town in order to bury the widow's son. So you had kind of Jesus' jubilant followers on the one side and the mourners on the other. There would have been noise, there would have been pushing and jostling. The Jewish custom of the day was to hire professional mourners as a mark of respect to a close one or loved one who had died. It's possible that this poor widow may have spent her last pennies, her last money on doing this so that it would just show the right kind of respect in her community. Then what happened? Well, we read verse 13, Jesus' heart went out to her. He had compassion on her. That word compassion itself, it comes from Latin. Jenna mentioned Latin earlier on, didn't she? Meaning to suffer with. And Jesus did just that. He suffered with the widow. But then he said an odd thing, didn't he? He said, don't cry. Can you imagine that? Saying don't cry to somebody who just lost her only son. It doesn't seem to be coming out of a counselling textbook, does it? But then Jesus simply touched the bier and the coffin. You notice he didn't touch the body. That would have been rendered him unclean in the Jewish society, although Jesus often, you know, broke with the tradition of the day. But he touched the briar, and he simply said, young man, get up. And the young man got up and was given back to his mother. You see that the people were amazed, they were naturally filled with awe, and they praised God. Some versions of the Bible say that the people were filled with fear. It would have been a natural response, wouldn't it, if you'd seen a dead person get up from his grave. And I noted in the reading when just this morning when Dave was reading it there, this woman had not asked for a miracle. Remember the previous day, the the centurion had asked Jesus to heal his servant. This woman had not asked for a miracle. I don't think she even demonstrated any great faith. She probably didn't even know Jesus. He'd only rocked up into town that day, hadn't he? Yet Jesus turned her deep sorrow into the ultimate joy. And the witnesses there, didn't they? They also seemed open to the spiritual. There was little skepticism at this outsider coming and joining in the funeral procession. We often get skepticism today, don't we, in today's world? But I'm just thinking of the past few weeks that I've sensed, even in the difficult time over the past year, in the challenging times, that there's been more openness to a spiritual dimension in our own society, perhaps more than we've seen for decades. I was reading a BBC report before the service this morning about Christian chaplains in London, university chaplains, airport chaplains, chaplains in churches. And they were each saying that the virus epidemic, the change in working, the change in circumstances, had also given them opportunities to speak on a deeper level to people as they decided how they were going to face some of the challenges that were faced. Now, the crowds who witnessed the widow's son being raised, they would also have known of another widow's son who was raised in that area. We read about the prophet Elijah, 900 years approximately before, he'd also raised a boy from the dead, only a few miles from the town of Nain in Galilee. It's all about in the book of 1 Kings. And there were striking similarities here. You know, as Elijah, he invoked God's power to raise the widow of Zarephath's son. Remember, he cried out to God and he stretched himself out three times over the boy before raising him to life. There was also another widow's son raised from the dead. Elisha, we read that about in the book of Kings. Elijah, he'd inherited a double portion of Elijah's spirit. He raised the only son of a Shunammite woman. So we've got three stories, three miracles, all which took place in something like a 20-kilometer triangle over the centuries. Elisha prayed to the Lord, he'd stretched himself out of the body and raised the widow's son. And the significance of these stories, which would have been passed down throughout the generations, and they would have been heard by the people in the town of Nain that we read about today, these would not have been lost on the witnesses to Jesus raising the widow's son. I think the difference, if you ever have time to look back on those three separate miracles where folk are raised from the dead, was just the comparative ease of how Jesus raised the widow's son using his own power. He just simply said, "Get up," and he did. And the people, they declared that a great prophet had appeared among them. Some went farther, you see, didn't we? We said, God has come, God has appeared to help his people. I think this miracle just gives a foretaste of something more remarkable to come for the people listening, the very resurrection of the dead. We didn't have time, but if you scroll down to verse 22, John the Baptist's messengers appeared, and they said, after hearing about these miracles, Jesus, are you the one, or should we expect someone else? And Jesus simply told them to go back and report what you've seen and heard. He said, the blind receive sight, the lame walk, lepers are cured, deaf are heard, the dead are raised, and the good news is preached to the poor. Now, this was still quite early in Jesus' ministry, but surely what more evidence of his divinity could people want? But we're left this morning trying to put this story into the context of today, aren't we? 2021 in Bristol. And all of this talk of miracles is well and good. But I was just thinking when I'm preparing for this that there'll be countless families who have experienced the searing loss of a loved one and not seen them brought to life again, particularly in the coronavirus epidemic over the past year. I've actually spoken to one in the past week. And I guess I doubt each of us carry our own stories, won't we? Part of our own journeys with God over the years or over the decades. And there'll be times in that journey where we'll have felt the presence of God and sometimes the absence of God. I was casting my mind back to summer in 1993. Long time ago now, isn't it? During that summer, two close relatives of my own, aged 21 and 23, were both killed in a motorcycle accident. Only 3 months after we'd enjoyed a happy family wedding celebration together. How? Why? You know, could they and others not have been raised to life like today's widow's son, even if it was just for the sake of their grieving mothers and fathers? It's difficult, isn't it? And I think it's a topic that we really need to approach with great sensitivity. I just want to say clearly now, I don't have the answers, and that's okay. It's okay to say we don't understand some things. We want to avoid cliches, coming up with trite theological explanations, which try to make sense of adversity, as often they will only serve to heighten to pain and misunderstanding. And I think that the truth is that in a world that's literally spinning around, our lives at times will contain random, inexplicable events. Sometimes for no other reason than that's how life is. I know that that's a big topic. You might want to challenge me or speak to me about that. I'll be happy to talk about that anytime. But today we can still draw real hope. It was nice to hear Lindsay's encouraging story, and I was just thinking recently how God had put it on my heart to be an encourager wherever possible. And this is the point of the story where the encouragement kicks in. Christian hope is profound, it's deep, and it can transform our very perspective. Sometimes the events of the here and now can be changed in the light of what we've been promised for the future. And I believe that these two miracles in Luke pointed towards the dawning of a new kingdom, and this can actually help us greatly in our own journey. When Jesus said to the widow, "Don't cry," still makes me smile at, "Don't cry." He was giving a foretaste, though, of what was yet to come. Read of Revelation 21, something which actually has been part of the Archbishop's evening prayer. I was thinking about this over the weeks. How God's dwelling is now among the people. It says he will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eye. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. The widow wouldn't need to cry. There'll be no tears in Jesus' kingdom. In Isaiah, there's some lovely words of how nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. They'll not need to in Jesus' kingdom. How those in war-torn countries, those I read about in Sammer's story, must long for this, when there'd be no need to train for war or anymore. There'd be no need for crying anymore. And it's worth noting too, isn't it, that these miracles were performed by an only son himself, by Jesus. He was the only son of God his Father. And he too, as we just remembered earlier on, would experience painful rejection, death on a cross, but only to be resurrected himself, like the young man that we read about. And we can have this same resurrection hope and assurance that God is with us throughout the challenges of life. And he also suffers with us, just as he did with the widow in today's story. There was an interesting Twitter comment recently, which gave an interesting perspective, which could be discussed when we have more time. You didn't have sermons on it, couldn't you? And it was just saying how 21st century Christians often speak of how God is present in our sufferings and we want to be protected from our difficulty, which is true. Whereas the early Christians, like Paul and others, they spoke more often of how they could enter into Christ's suffering and find the true joy by becoming more and more like him. That's a huge topic, but a very interesting perspective that we could talk about at some point. As we just begin to draw to a close, I was just thinking about Luke's next book. The next book he wrote was the book of Acts. And he began that book by saying, "In my former book, Theophilus," he dropped the most excellent that he used at the beginning of Luke. So he was suggesting that the relationship between him and his friend was warmer, it was more informal, and that he may even have brought his friend to faith. There's a challenge for us here, a challenge for me. Is there a Theophilus-type figure in our life? Maybe a friend or a colleague or a neighbour, someone by our actions, our words, probably not by writing a book, an account like Luke did, but someone just by who, being who we are, we may be able to encourage and explain the faith to in a way which will help them. I'm not too good at this at times, so it's a big challenge to me as I present that challenge to you too. But I think also it's good to remember, isn't it, that we aren't alone on this journey. We have the Alma community to support us and to help us. The widow in today's story had the townsfolk, and the soldier, the centurion, he had his contemporaries and the friends he'd made amongst the Jewish community to support him. And throughout life's ups and downs and challenges, we have each other as our brothers and sisters to come alongside us. So here we have it, Jesus, miracle man, the one who heals people without even the need to actually see them, the one who raises people from the dead. He even appeared to his followers after his resurrection, quite close to the town of Nain in Galilee, just to show how he'd risen. And we still have this hope, this assurance of Jesus' healing power in our lives. We still have this hope of life eternal today. It's still available to his followers. And we have that guarantee of a future when there will be no more need for tears or war or anything which is detrimental to society in that way. So I'll leave that with you and just pray that God will bless you in the coming weeks and that we may be able to encourage those around us, just as Luke encouraged his friend Theophilus. Thank you very much and goodbye.